Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 304, McMonagle here with you. Three hours down. Two more to go in our five-hour midnight ride. Let's get back to the Mets a little bit, as obviously they have a 7-2 victory over Philadelphia and just doing everything right. I mean, making the other teams pay for their mistakes, hitting home runs. Manaea was incredible in this game. Let's hear a couple of the highlights from Howie Rose, who's really on a roll here. And Keith Radd, excuse me. But
first pitch on the way.
Sorry. No, I'm sorry. That's poor communication. They've been on a roll because every one of these games has these moments. It's crazy. Now, this one was a little more ho-hum, if you can, imagine that, but still some big-time moments. Let's go through some of the highlights here. Let's start with the Pete Alonso home run to give the Mets a 1-0 lead.
First pitch on the way. Hit high in the air to right field, pretty deep. Castellanos back at the track, at the wall, and it's gone! He hit it off the facing of the second deck, the Coca-Cola corner. Another opposite field home run for Pete Alonso. The Mets are leading by a score of 1-0.
Pete Alonso with another opposite field home run. The guy has been on a tear since hitting that big home run in Milwaukee. Then we get to the bottom of the fourth, and this was a bomb, and I was surprised to see it only went 399 feet. I thought he absolutely tanked this thing. But here's the Winker home run to give the Mets a 2-0 lead.
2-1. Winker hits a high drive, right field, toward the pole. It is gone! Second deck shot, Jesse Winker. 2-0 Mets in the fourth. Oh, did he turn on that, kept it fair, and set it out to the Coca-Cola corner.
Yeah, he definitely enjoyed that home run. He enjoyed hitting that home run. That is, Winker loves doing that, that's for sure. And then I guess they said on the broadcast, that he enjoys still waving to the fans in remembrance of when he was doing it as a troll job. What started as a troll is now I forget what the word they used was. But they had this whole line on the broadcast, is now a acknowledgement.
I don't know what they said on the broadcast, but I can tell you that in the game, at the post-game interview, they did Iglesias first, then Winker.
Yeah.
He dropped the S word.
Really?
And people went, said holy blank, and people went nuts.
That's funny. All right, then we get to really the turning point of the game for me, where I thought the game was in the balance. Manaea, who obviously was pitching a great game up until this point, comes out in the sixth inning, walks Schwarber to lead off, and then he pitches to Turner, and I felt like it was really a non-competitive at bat. Even the call strike was like a borderline, and then ball four was really up and away, not even close. And I was worried in this moment because obviously Bryce Harper's coming up, and I know it's lefty lefty, but hey, it's Bryce Harper who they tried to stay away from, who you can't in this moment. And this was where I thought maybe the game could get away, and instead Manaea settles in and makes the biggest pitches of the game and figures out a way to get through Harper and Castellanos.
Here's the 0-2. Swing and a miss, strike three. Went with a sweeper instead. And on three pitches, Bryce Harper strikes out. One man away. 0-2. Here's the pitch. Swing and a liner to second. It's caught by Iglesias. Flips to second. Double play. They double off Schwarber. And that retires the side. Manaea screams once or twice as he walks off the mound as the Phillies are done in the sixth.
Yeah, that was the game for me. I knew at that moment the Mets weren't losing. That was, if they were going to get to him, they were going to get to him right there. It wasn't going to happen. I mean, that's how good he's been. That's and what a, I mean, to strike him out on that sweeper and then to get that line drive for the double play. I mean, just an incredible, because I thought he was in trouble. I got to admit, as confident as I am in the Mets watching them, in that moment, he walks those two guys and Turner wasn't even close. And now he's got to go to Harper, and I thought he was going to fall behind and be forced to, you know, groove one. I was really nervous, and instead gets out of it without even facing three more batters. Just
and did you hear Mendoza after the game what he said about that moment?
No.
So they asked him, like, what was your level of concern? And he said, well, not concern, but he did say at that point he was batter to batter with Sean Manaea, who ends up obviously getting through that inning, two of the tougher hitters,
and then pitching
another full inning.
Inning plus.
And then starting the inning after that.
Because I got to admit, if I'm not letting him face Castellanos if Harper gets on in any way. Walk, base hit, whatever. Three-run home run, you know. I don't have to knock. It didn't happen. But, yeah, that was it. And then in true Met fashion, what do? After the Phillies make some noise and have a little bit of a rally, even though it falls flat, maybe building some momentum, the Mets pounce right on them. In the bottom of the sixth, Vientos leads off with a single. Nimmo and Alonso both walk. Bases loaded, nobody out. And un-Met-like, Iglesias hits into a fielder's choice ground ball. Alonso out at the plate. Alonso to second, Nimmo to third, as I'm reading it. Vientos, obviously, out at the plate. Winker flies out to left, not deep enough to score the run. And you thought maybe the Mets would waste an opportunity. But not this Met team. Not this year. There is no way they're coming out with bases loaded, nobody out, not getting any runs across. And Starlin Marte, who honestly has had a bunch of big hits during this run, had a bunch of big singles and a bunch of two-out hits and a bunch of run-scoring hits, and has kind of been lost in the shuffle because he hasn't hit that big home run to break open a game. But he's really come through with a lot of good at-bats that start rallies, good at-bats that knock in runs. Marte's kind of been the unsung hero of all this. And he comes through with a big single to break take it from a nervous, always a bloop and a blast away two-run lead to a nice, comfortable four-run lead.
The 1-0 line to left center field. That's a base hit. Nimmo is in. Alonso rounds third. He's going to score. The throw goes to third. Stopping at second is Iglesias. And on at first with a clutch two-run single is Starlin Marte. The Mets are leading by a score of 4-0.
Yeah, he's been, I mean, that is a very clutch hit. Let me hear that one once again because you were talking to me. I wanted to hear if he said about the biggest hit. It's not in this version, but I think he did say that, but it doesn't matter.
He did. A couple seconds later, he said the biggest hit of his Mets career.
Right, which it is, but it feels like it's kind of a go-to for Howie now. But hey, that's what they're doing right now. There's no doubt about it. Then we get to the seventh, which we said, you know, Manaea was batter to batter, and yet even with a pitch count, you know, the pitch count was low. They did add to the lead, and I think that was key. I'm sure they probably would have went to the bullpen and Reed Garrett, if it's still a two-run lead, but instead it's a four-run lead with that hit. It gives them a little bit of room. Manaea is at only 80-some-odd pitches in the game. So they send him out back for the seventh, and it's about as easy an inning as he's had all day.
Manaea will try again. Slow windup, high kick, 0-2. Got him swinging, sweeper down and in. Seven shutty for Sean Manaea. A 1-2-3 seventh inning.
A 1-2-3 seventh. It completes seven shutty innings, and he only needed seven pitches to do so. And then again, bottom of the seventh, we don't have to give you all the stuff, but bases loaded again, and Iglesias, who just continues to have big hit after big hit, breaks the game open.
Line towards center field, base hit for Iglesias. Bader is in, Nimmo rounding third. The throw from center hits the mound, kicks behind home plate. Here comes Alonso, chugging to the plate.
Chugging.
The tag, he's out. But the Mets add two on a two-run single by Jose Iglesias to make it 6-0 Mets.
6-0 Mets. Big hit from Iglesias. He just continues to do it. It's amazing what they're doing right now. It's amazing what they're getting out of Taylor. Who makes a great throw in this game to throw out Bohm at second base and eliminate a double. I mean, he's doing it. Marte's doing it. Iglesias is doing it. It's just, it's crazy. Everybody is coming through, gives them a 6-run lead. They make it 7-2 after Harper with an RBI single and Castellanos with an RBI single. And then let's get the final call to put a final stamp on this Game 3 victory where they take a 2-1 lead heading into tonight's game. The final call with Howie Rose on the call for the Mets, Odyssey Mets Radio Network.
Stanek sets now the pitch. Swing and a miss, strike three, put it in the books. Ryan Stanek blows a fastball by Cody Clemens. The Mets have won the ball game, and they have taken a 2-1 lead in the National League Division Series. Game 4 against the Phillies right back here tomorrow night.
Right back here tonight. I love it. 2 games. Thankfully, they're not at the same time. It was a disaster. Hopefully they don't go into the same time. But, yes, big-time win, 7-2. They play excellent baseball. There's just no doubt. I mean, in every way, shape, and form. This was as clean-cut and decisive a victory as they've had. No need for heroics for the most part. Led from wire to wire. Take game 3. And now have a chance to end this series at home at Citi Field and get ready to take on either the Padres or the Dodgers. But they do have to win this game first. And you do want to do it because you do not want to head back to Philadelphia with Zach Wheeler on the mound in a winner-take-all game. You just want to avoid that at all costs. Even though I'd feel confident in them because that's the kind of game they've won all year, and all playoffs at least, should I say, I would still not like to see it. So let's get it done tonight. Move on to the NLCS and get ready for the winner of Padres-Dodgers. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls here. Bobby in Oceanside. What's up, Bobby?
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you?
That was the best post-game show I ever
heard.
Yeah,
how about that? A little
it
fun.
In 10 minutes, and you did all the highlights, you gave all the commentary, and yep. No 45 minutes of commercial.
How about that? Anyway. I know. It's amazing.
But here's what I want to tell you. Because you said it about 20 minutes ago, and this has been my whole summer. I'm a Mets fan, mm-hmm. Lifelong Mets fan, and I'm not one of those 1986 denier young Mets fans. Oh, I never won a championship, crybabies. But my favorite player in baseball is Aaron Judge, and I love Juan Soto on the Yankees, and I hope Juan Soto signs with the Yankees. And
you're a Mets fan who hopes
we can't root for both teams.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why either. I have to admit, I don't know why. You'd have to explain to me why you can't. Like I heard,
forget about that right now.
What's that?
I do hate the Jets, but that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I don't know. That's even worse. I don't know why Giant fans hate the Jets or the Jets
I
hate the Giants.
But this whole baseball season with these two teams. And I want the Yanks to freaking win tomorrow and get it done and actually take them out before they have to come home so they can be rested and their bullpen can be good because nobody's bullpen. I don't trust any bullpen in baseball, and neither do you. And, it's a great time to be a baseball fan
yep. In
New York. And we should all be rooting for both these teams. That's all I got, Chris.
You got Thanks it. But, yeah, listen, I agree. I really do agree. And I remember, like, and again, not to, and I understand Michael Kay's point, and he kind of had a good rant on this. And you don't have to root for him if you don't want to, but one of the things he made it seem like as if then winning's not important. Just, oh, we'll celebrate this win and we'll celebrate that win. And so when your team wins, it won't be special. Like, I'm not a Yankee fan rooting for the Red Sox. Like, I don't understand what the Mets are. A city rivalry? What is that? That's made up. A geographical rivalry? They're not in the same division. What, because one plays in, you know, one borough and the other one plays in another borough? We have to dislike each other? I don't understand it. I really don't. I'll never understand it. Now, look, the Mets lost to the Yankees in the World Series. So if you harbor ill will about that I understand. I do. If that's your reason, if your reason is, you know, oh, my best friend's a Yankee fan, and every time they win, he bothers the hell out of me. I can't take it anymore. I can't imagine watching him celebrate another championship. I can't. I hate the Yankees. That, I think, is a dumb reason. I do. I think it's a dumb reason. If you hate the Yankees because you remember, you know, Luis Soho's dribbler up the middle that broke your heart, and it's something that stuck with you your whole life, that I get, because I have moments like that. I have moments like that where I hate the team because of whatever reason, but it's teams I compete with for the most part. Mets and Yankees don't really compete. I know they play a couple times a year. They play six times in 162 games. They're not going to. Now, if there's realignment, it's bets are off. When they add the two teams and do the realignment, and the Yankees and the Mets, and unfortunately it's coming, and I think we might, like, I hate the idea that we might lose the American and National League. Like, it makes you sick when you put it that way. I understand it, and I think it would be fun. Like, honestly, if there's realignment and the Mets and the Yankees are in the same division, can you imagine a series in September where the winner of the series wins the division over the other? I mean, that would be so much fun here in this city. But then it's a war, and we hate one another. That's the case. Once it becomes they're battling each other for a division, they're in the same division, which I think is going to happen eventually, that's when it's on. But right now, that's not the case. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Good morning, Brother Mac. Yo, that's inviting bedlam, bro. I don't know about that one. That's inviting bedlam. That's when it's going to be like.
The expansion's coming. They're going to add two teams, and when they do, they're talking about. Who's whistling? What is that?
That's a train pulling in. I swear, every time I find a spot, something new.
I mean, jeez, what was that? Anyway,
yeah, it was a train pulling in. I'm pulling. No, I'm walking to the corner to get away from it.
It's okay. The realignment's coming, and I think the division's probably going to be like Mets, Yankees, Boston, Philly. Maybe Baltimore. Like, it's going to be a geographical division, and they'll eliminate as much travel.
Yeah. Whatever. I just know that's going to be bedlam. But to get to I wanted to talk to you about some Jet stuff. Okay. But if I could just say one thing real quick about yesterday. We spoke yesterday, and there was one more point I wanted to make about Rodon. Okay. And I really wanted to make it because it seems to be the prevailing thought now. I actually think that, you know, as much as he did implode in that fourth inning, I think, you know, what we were talking about with the because I think the offense, while they weren't obligated to do it, but if you get to any kind of idea of complimentary baseball, they kind of owed him one of those three innings where they kind of made, maybe the fourth inning might have been a little bit different for him mentally. And in terms of the pressure with which he was throwing those pitches and the kind of things that were going through his mind, maybe that might have been a little bit different, and his fourth inning might have been a little bit different. So I'm not ready to give up on Rodon yet to say that he's done, because I've heard people saying that, and I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. But to get to where I called you this morning to talk to the Jets stuff, two things really quickly that kind of scare me about what's going on. And I listened to what Fleek said, and he's right on with a lot of what he talked about. But somehow I don't think that what happened yesterday changes any of that. Because when I was actually in bed, you know, like it was kind of like late morning, early afternoon.
Okay.
I get up, I turn on the TV, and I pop on ESPN just to kind of get a flash on, like, you know, the talk of the moment and see what's going on, because it was the top of the hour. And I heard the Jets thing, and my wife was in the kitchen, Mac, I swear to goodness. And all she heard was me say, you know, I just started cursing. I was about to do it just now, and I realized where I was talking.
Yeah.
But I started cursing in the room, and I'm like, what is going on? And all of a sudden, she just popped her head in the door and was like, you just heard about Robert Saleh, didn't you? And they just went right back to the kitchen. And I was like, yes, I did, baby. How did you know? And she had some alert where she found out before I even woke up.
Right.
But the thing about it that I don't like are three things. One, the timing. Two, not that it's a big thing, but, you know, you just came back from England where you were ambassador. I don't know how many of his friends called him and was like, yo, what happened, Woody? Happened with that game, Woody? And then the next thing about it that I don't like, Fleeks made some points that were really, really good when he was talking about who the replacement is. And I feel very much the same way he does as far as who I'm looking for in terms of a head coach. But somehow, because of the story that came out after, when you heard about Saleh deciding to try to do something, and then something else happens, and then 5 minutes later he gets called to it, there's something in there, like somewhere around it, that has something to do with it too. And if you're telling me that he has that kind of control over the team, because who's to say that Saleh wasn't trying to say things like, maybe I prefer if you did this offensively, maybe I prefer if you did that, and they wanted him out of the room to begin with. And then when something like this happens now, because he can't get what he wants from Hackett. They get him out the room. Who's to say they don't do that to Albrecht also? You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't like the timing of it. I understand that we're 2-3, and just like you said, we could be fighting for the first place in the division come next week Monday.
You are.
That's
fighting.
A fact. Yeah. That's a fact. But at the same time, like, I don't see how this move right now really, really helps that. I think that just kind of like, there's a chance that you could have everybody talking about this, oh, the coach just got fired, and you get that spark. But there are problems that are going on in that room and in that building right now that go beyond just a spark. If what I think is happening really is happening.
Yeah, no, it's not, I don't disagree, Valen. Thank you for the call. I'm hesitant to think that it's gonna change things. I think if you know it's very rarely does. We saw the name is escaping me. He took over for the Marlins in 03, Jack McKeon, and that led to a championship. We've seen, famously, Bob Lemon took over for Billy Martin. I almost said Ricky Martin. That would have been blasphemy. Billy Martin, and led to a championship. But you don't see it in football. You don't typically see it because there's not enough games to get back into things. You know that's, but it's never really. If someone could give me an example, I can't think of one where a coaching change was made and then the team went on a significant run, not even to a championship or just a significant run. You know, last year, did the Raiders get better because they hated the coach? Yeah, I guess. What's the other one that happened in Carolina? They got rid of... I'm terrible with names at 3:30 in the morning. Matt Rhule, after... Bisaccia took over for Gruden. They got a spark too. That's true. Did that team make the playoffs? Was that the year that they had that game with
yeah, they yeah, made the yeah. playoffs and lost to the Bengals.
Okay. All right. So that's one. I guess that's one. But, I mean, it doesn't happen that often. Now, this is a very talented team. It doesn't often happen to talented teams like this, but I guess there's always a chance. And look, He was such a poor head coach, you can't get mad at it, but I don't know what it's going to do. And it feels like it just reinforces that they're just completely inept. 888-808-1019, quick break. Come back, take more of your phone calls. Mets, Jets, Yankees. We got to start doing Yankees here, let's be honest. I want to talk about possible. I've been thinking about it a lot because I walked in, I was with Evan and Tiki for a little bit, and Tiki made a suggestion to me about what the Yankees should do with their pitching, and I dismissed it. And I've been thinking about it, and I still don't know if I like it, but I feel like at least it's worth a discussion on what the Yankees should do with their pitching. Well, maybe a thought or two what the lineup should look like and some possibilities, but ultimately, whatever they do, it's going to come down to Judge hitting. We know that. Big game tonight, game 3 for the New York Yankees against Kansas City. We got game 4. Mets and Phillies. Mets looking to end that.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jets have a new head coach.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, you know what I think it's time for? It's time for everybody's favorite segment. The Yankee Shill Take of the Day. Are you ready? Let's get into the Yankee Shill Take of the Day. So, Jazz Chisholm caught a lot of grief for his comments after the postgame. I even gave him some. After the game on Monday night, he talked about hitting the ball at a lot of guys, a lot of hard hit balls at people. And he talked about how they still expect to win the series. Nothing's changed. And he said they got lucky talking to the Kansas City Royals. And I had no problem with the confidence and saying you're going to win the series. You have to believe you're going to win the series. There's nothing wrong with saying I think we're going to win. You shouldn't call the Kansas City Royals lucky. It's silly, considering the way the game was played out, considering the idea that every replay that I have seen indicates that you were out at second base before you scored the game-winning run in game one. So, and it's just disrespectful to say a Major League Baseball team is like, we're so good, only you'd have to be lucky to beat us. It's condescending, it's BS, and it's a stupid thing to say. But having said that, if you look at it, and if you went to his Twitter page today, you would see that, in fact, there is a Jazz Chisholm reposted or retweeted a MLB deserve to win-o-meter. I guess there is a handle, a Twitter handle, that goes through the game and measures a bunch of different stuff. Exit velo, home runs hit, walks allowed, all kinds of different statistics. And if you look at the game, the Yankees in game two had a 72% chance to win the game by the statistics and what happened and how the balls were put in play. A 72% chance to win. So in other words, if every at-bat in the game happened exactly the same 100 times, the ball was hit as hard with the same launch angle, all that stuff, the Yankees should win the game 72 times out of 100. The Royals should win 20 times, and I don't know how you have a tie in baseball, but I guess after 9 innings maybe, tie 8% of the time. And if you look at the ex-WOBA, which I know everyone's really interested in, and I'm sure everyone wants to hear this, all the Yankee fans right now, who the same Yankee fans who are mad at me for rooting for the Mets but hate their team with a passion, are probably like, who cares about ex-WOBA? What does that even mean? Well, it's weighted on base percentage. It takes into account pretty much your at-bats and the expectation of getting on base, which creates runs, clearly. Of the four teams who played on Monday, both American League DS series, of the four teams who played on Monday, the Yankees had the highest ex-WOBA. So they, with how hard they hit the ball, launch angle, exit velo, all that stuff, they should have been on base and theoretically hit the ball harder than any other team who played on the field, more than the Royals, more than the Tigers, more than the Guardians. Now, that was a low-scoring game. There probably wasn't a lot of offense. But still, they had the highest level of hard-hit balls that are expected to be damaging at-bats. And instead, they got nowhere with almost all of them. So this is my only point is, when I hear people say that the Yankees' offense was lifeless in that game, too, and once they fell behind, they were lifeless, and they showed no fight and no urgency, and it's embarrassing. What I will tell you is I disagree with all of that. I don't think they were lifeless at all. I don't think they folded. I don't think they showed no fight. I think they fought. I think they had life. I think they hit the ball harder and had better at-bats than the Kansas City Royals outside the one inning. But this is a result-oriented business. And in by no way or means am I saying they should have won. They shouldn't have won. They didn't get the hits. Kansas City did. We could talk about hard hit all we want. You have to come through and actually put the ball on the grass or over the fence. I'm not saying anything other. I just don't want to build into a narrative of they're not trying, they're lifeless, they're dead. They weren't dead. They weren't lifeless. They had a lot of good at-bats. Walks are still important, and walks are earned. And they hit the ball hard. Jazz Chisholm lined out to center on a hard-hit, high-velocity ball. Gleyber Torres lined out to third base on an extremely hard-hit ball. birdie, hit one to left and right, hard hit balls. Volpe hit a bullet to right field, hard hit ball. That's five off the top of my head. I'm not saying they should have won. I'm not saying that performance offensively is good enough or acceptable, and it's just, hey, bad luck. That's the name of the game. But so often when teams don't score, we're so quick to say lifeless and dead and don't care and no fight. It's not what happened with the Yankees. It's just not. And that's why I still have expectations of this offense moving forward, because I didn't see a lifeless, dead team who just went 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3 and didn't have good at-bats and didn't care. Now, in the ninth inning, did I think they had some poor at-bats? Yes. With the closer on the mound in a little bit of a jam and a 2-0 count to Verdugo, there is no reason to swing at a 2-0 fastball off the outside corner and hit a lazy ground ball to third base. That was a terrible at-bat. Take a strike 2-0 after he just walked somebody and the crowd's going nuts. Make him throw a strike. Take one. Same thing with Gleyber Torres. The last, after John Birdie gets a hit, the last at-bat of the game, he swings at a first-pitch fastball inside and rolls a lazy ground ball to shortstop. Terrible at-bat. I'm not saying they were all, it was all good at-bats. Judge in the first inning clearly shaped the entire game with a terrible at-bat. But if you watch the game, you didn't have to look for the ex-WOBA. You didn't have to look for the luck factor on Twitter. If you were being fair and objective, both things are true. The Yankees didn't do enough, but they fought, and they had good at-bats. And if a ball or two goes 3 feet to the left or right, the game might have been different. There's your Yankee shill take of the day. I do not think the offense was dormant. I don't think they were lazy. I don't think they didn't give a damn. I don't think they folded. I think they friggin' put together a bunch of good at-bats and in many ways got unlucky. And while I wish Jazz Chisholm would have said that, because I think there is a little bit of credence to the Yankees were a little bit unlucky. Now, they were lucky in game one. So it all evens out, and by no means am I saying anything other than the series should be tied 1-1 heading into Kansas City. But what I won't say is this offense is going to go, you know, dormant and not fight and be lifeless again, because that's what they showed me in game two, when in fact they did not show you that. That's what you wanted to see, because the runs aren't there and you hate the team. But that's not what they did. They fought, they had good at-bats, they weren't rewarded for it in many cases. And ultimately, it wasn't good enough, and they lost the game. But I still have confidence in this group, and I still think they're going to win this series, and I still expect Aaron Judge to come through. And because, you know, someone sent me on Twitter a poll, and I'm assuming it was a sarcastic poll, but it said, who would you rather have up in a big spot in the postseason? Pete Alonso, Mark Vientos, or Aaron Judge? And I will tell you this without any doubt in my mind, any fear of saying this, or any hesitation in saying that the answer is clearly Aaron Judge. That's who I want up. I don't want Pete Alonso up. I don't want Mark Vientos up. I respect those two. And in this recent last couple of days, they have done a better job. I don't want anybody up in the entire Major League Baseball. I don't want anybody else up ever in any spot. April, May, June, July, August, September, October. There is one person I want up, and that's the best hitter in the world. And that's Aaron Judge. That's who I want up. Now, he's had a bad postseason history, particularly built on the idea that he's been miserable for the last 60 to 80 at-bats. I can't hide from that. I won't hide from it. I can't run from it. I won't run from it. He's been brutally bad, particularly to start this postseason, which, again, killed them in the first inning. I think it's the key to the game, his first inning at-bat. And if they weren't as lucky to win game one, we'd be talking about how in the first inning he killed both games of this postseason. That's true as well. And he was miserable the entire postseason 2 years ago following that unbelievable record-breaking season. He has done it in the postseason before. It's not like he never has. He hasn't come close to doing it as of recently. I don't care. Start the game tomorrow and give me anybody in the world to be up in a big-time spot. I will pick Aaron Judge. Do you know why? Because over the last 4 or 5 years, not the last 70, 80 at-bats, over the last 4 or 5 seasons, there is not a better hitter in the world. And eventually, he will come through. And I will always take the best hitter. Not some fluky stance that or stat that tells me this guy's better in the postseason. Should I take Steve Pierce? Should I take David Eckstein? Is that who I should have in a big spot over Aaron Judge? No, thank you. Now, I guess you could play that game if you need a single or just get on base in any way, shape, or form. You have a guy who, even though Judge walks all the time, you have somebody of small stature. You have somebody who could beat out an infield single. You know, somebody puts the ball in play a little bit more. Okay. But ultimately, in a big spot, needing to drive the baseball, needing to hit a home run, certainly, needing to drive the baseball. He did hit 320 this year. I don't care about his postseason numbers. I don't care. Game on the line, my life on the line tomorrow. I want the best hitter in the world up, and that's Aaron Judge. 888-808-1019. Stuart in Brooklyn, what's up, Stu?
I have to agree with you. He is the best hitter in the world, but there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, but he has to come through. And yeah, you're right, he will eventually come through.
He has to come through. And listen, if he plays in the postseason enough, he will. Doesn't guarantee he will today. Doesn't mean he'll guarantee he'll do it in this postseason. And if he doesn't, I'll rip him too. I'm not saying he's above reproach. Not saying if he doesn't come through. Yeah, exactly. If he doesn't come through, it doesn't mean I can't kill him or rip him or tell the truth and say,
yeah,
I'm tired of hearing about how the Yankees are wasting Aaron Judge's prime when Aaron Judge has done nothing to help them. So that's all fair. It's all fair. What I'm saying is, as long as he is the best hitter in the planet, and that will continue, I'm hoping, next year and the year after and the year after, however long it continues, I will always believe that the next at-bat is the at-bat that he gets going. I will always believe it. I don't care if he doesn't get another hit the entire rest of this postseason. I need a home run. I need a double. I need a big-time at-bat with my life on the line. I'm taking Aaron Judge. I don't care what he did the 100 previous at-bats in the postseason. And now, if he does it over the course of the regular season and has a miserable year, I'll change my mind. But there is no doubt he is the best hitter on the planet. He's had arguably the greatest right-handed hitting season of all time. And if I needed a base hit, if I needed an at-bat, if I needed a home run, there's only one guy I'm picking.
Well, that's the same the way I feel, the same way. But, mm-hmm. You know, there's no buts. But, you know, he's bound to come through. He's bound to have a big at-bat and come through. And then maybe that will get him going as for the rest of the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope he did get a single on his last. He got his last two at-bats were a walk and a single. And if you take over, like, I don't, strikeouts, I know it's not good. And in the postseason, they don't help you move runners and stuff. Strikeouts are bad. Nobody wants to have the highest strikeout percentage in the history of the postseason, which right now he's second. But if you look at it overall, he's on base 3 times in 2 games, which isn't awful. It's not awful. The problem is, in both games, the first inning, he's got a chance to break the games open, and he failed. That's my main problem. My main problem is the first inning at bats. It's not even so much the collective series he's put together, the strikeouts he's put together. Like, that doesn't even bother me. Getting on base 3 times in 2 games is not a disaster. It really isn't. Now, he hasn't impacted the team. He hasn't driven in a run, hasn't hit a home run. It's not good, but it's not like he's over. And it's not like he's been on, he's walked twice and got a base hit. It's two games and he's got on base three times. It's not good enough for what Aaron Judge needs to do to help this team win, but it's not like, oh my God, the guy is completely lost out there. The problem is he had, in both games, he had two runners on, nobody out in the first inning, and an opportunity to just, like, if he gets to Reagan's there, that is a huge hit to the Kansas City Royals. Like, they're down a game. They put their best pitcher on the mound and three batters in. They're down 2-0, 3-0, 1-0. Like, that's a major blow. And instead, he allows them to get off the hook. And even though they got his pitch count up and got him out of the game, and I think that's part of what I'm talking about with doing a good job in many ways offensively and not being lifeless, not good enough. So while overall I'm not looking at his series and going, oh my God, what a disaster, it's not about the entire series. It's about those two at-bats. Those two at-bats were hideous. They were his worst two at-bats, and they can't continue. When he's got guys on, if they're up again on the road, which I think is going to be an important factor for them, I like the idea. They get away from the noise. They get away from, and, you know, that's another story, too. Again, I don't know if it's Yankee fans. In fact, I probably think it's not. But, like, people who are threatening Rodon's wife and children on social media are despicable, disgusting people. And Rodon talked about the idea of players talking about this. Like, this has come up before with Yankee fans. It has, and I know, and I agree with the idea of, oh, if you're not tough enough to play here, don't play here. It didn't keep Judge from signing. I don't think it'll keep Soto from signing. But ultimately, like, when you boo Aaron Judge, when there's this much of a vitriolic feeling around the team, and then a pitcher doesn't pitch well, and the first thing his wife sees on her social media page for, I believe, a foundation, is violence being threatened upon her and her family. When IKF and his father, I believe, get accosted driving out of Yankee Stadium because he didn't play well. Like, that's when it gets too far, and that stuff probably is talked around Major League Baseball, that it's toxic here. And it's probably overblown, and I don't know if it's something that would prevent someone from coming to the Yankees, but it's not cool. It's not cool at all. But getting away, going on the road, getting away from the pressures, because look, they have to, if they lose, their failures, and their manager might be out of a job. Like, there's pressure on the Yankees to win this series, immense pressure. And getting away from all that, going on the road, staying in a hotel, galvanizing, getting to start the game right back at it offensively, like, I just think it could be key for them. But I'll tell you this right now, if Aaron Judge gets on that, comes up with runners on again in the first inning, I don't care that baseball's a game of failure. I don't care that if he gets a hit three times out of, if he fails seven times out of 10, he's a Hall of Famer and all the other cliches. If he comes up for the third consecutive game with runners on in the first inning, he has to do something. He has to. Because it immediately sets a tone for the game. They live and die by this guy. They believe he walks on water. He is half man, half God to this group of players. He just is. And not just to the Volpes of the world and the Oswaldo Cabreras of the world and the Jason Dominguezes of the world, to the Anthony Rizzos of the world, to the Giancarlo Stantons of the world. They can't believe how freaking good this guy is. And he means everything to them. And he can't come up small in those at-bats. He just can't. You want to go 1-for-4? That's fine if the one is the base hit with runners on in the first inning. John in Monmouth County. What's up, John?
Hey, what's up, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Good. I really think that this excuses, like, with Didi posting, comes from the top down in the playoffs. And it kind of... It shows up more now. It comes the tournament comment from Cashman. I mean, Rodon gave up two, like, they scored two runs. They didn't play good. Volpe threw the ball in the right field one game. They got a bunch of walks to skate by the first game. And rather than posting expected wins or whatever, they should just man up and just take accountability. And I think that comes from the top down.
Well, I mean, I think the players have taken accountability. You're talking about Jazz Chisholm, who has been here for half a year, and this is what he's done. This is why some people thought it might be a problem to bring him in here. But I, you know, this is who he is. We want players to be honest. We want players to show enthusiasm. We want players to be themselves. We want players to have swagger and have attitude. And then when they do it, we don't like it. Like,
that's not swagger. It's just. He said he's gonna win,
and listen, I don't like the lucky comments. He should have said we were unlucky as opposed to the Kansas City Royals were lucky, but I understand your point. You want to take accountability and say we need to do better. That's what Judge said we need to do better. Stanton said we need to do better. Jazz is a different cat. Jazz is a different guy.
And he also
hit a home run in the ninth inning and has had good at bats this series. And that's really I care about.
I think he's a good player. I'm glad he's on the team. I think he's the third best hitter on the team. But the attitude from Cashman and Boone that we're expecting ourselves to win is just what really like. You think they're great?
You don't think they should? You don't think they should expect to win?
I don't think Derek Jeter or whoever from that team would be bragging about how we should have won the game.
No. That is absolutely true. Derek Jeter would not brag about how they should have won the game. And Derek Jeter also didn't have social media to this extent. And he was responding to trolls who were getting after him about the comments. So that's why he was reposting stuff like you know, the luck probability and the Yankees were supposed. He was justifying his comments. I don't think he was bragging. I think he's been getting a lot of crap, and he has an ability to go to Twitter and clap back, for lack of a better term. But I agree with you. Not the best of looks. But he's got to go out there and perform. Plain and simple, he's got to go out there and perform. But, I mean, you're the second or third person I've heard has a problem with Brian Cashman calling it a tournament. Is it not? They literally had brackets this year. They literally have brackets now. It's bracketed. They don't reseed. It's bracketed. Is it not a tournament? Like, I really don't understand. By calling it a tournament, you're saying it's a crapshoot? I guess that's the argument, right? When you call it a tournament, you're insinuating it's a crapshoot. That's what I've heard from other people. And I also saw, I think, Bobby Malone, who's a good Yankee fan, has a lot of good stuff he puts out on Twitter as well. One of the Yankee universe Twitter people that I can tolerate. And he even said, you know, he put up Judge and how bad he's been in the postseason and said, it's not a crapshoot. It's your best player is not performing. Well, clearly. Well, don't you think that means it's a crapshoot? Like, we get mad at Brian Cashman for calling a crapshoot. Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees signed the best hitter in the world. If he doesn't perform in the playoffs, is it their fault? Should they do something different, better? How do you do better than the best? Because they got enough from everybody else. Verdugo, oh, what a terrible signing with killing Verdugo. What a disaster it's been. Besides overthrowing the cutoff man and allowing a runner to get into second base, he had the game-winning hit. He's had hits in both games. He led off the seventh with a single to give them an opportunity to spark it. He's played good defensively, made sliding catches. Dominguez, like, he's doing it. Wells came through with a single. Like, the Jazz Chisholm hits a home run, the trade deadline acquisition. Like, if Judge isn't going to hit, doesn't that prove it's a crapshoot? Because over the course of 162, nobody hits better. How do you build a team preparing for your greatest hitter in the league to not perform? Should they bench him? Should they get a bunch of pesky single hitters and keep them on the 40-man roster down in the minor leagues? Have Judge and his 58 home runs carry them to the playoffs? And then once the playoffs come, bring up all the Punch and Judy hitters? It is a crapshoot. You don't like it? It is. It's not completely, not 100%. You have occasionally, you'll have groups like the Astros who put it together year in and year out. Where's last year's World Series winner? Where's last year's National League champion? When's the last time a team won back-to-back world championships? In the year 2000.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.